I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa.
Hello, hello, Vashon Island. How are you today? This is Megan Hastings with the Cats and Jammer Follies on Voice of Vashon. And today I have the lovely Carla DeCrona. Am I pronouncing that correctly,
yes,
your last
you are.
Name? Okay,
mm-hmm.
Great. She is a longtime Islander, kind of here and there, really, because she is such a wanderer of this world, and she actually is just back from a 6-month trip.
Correct. Longer, actually.
Longer than that, where she had been in Scotland.
In Portugal.
And did you do the, what is the name of that walk that everybody
Camino,
did? You
Santiago.
Did that, right?
We started it, but then COVID interrupted. So we got stranded in Portugal for 5 months. We couldn't get out. The borders all closed,
so
and we were stuck. It was great, actually.
Yeah. No, are you kidding me? I'd like to be stuck in Portugal for 5 months. It'd be like a dream come true. Can you, just as we're still in these times of COVID, can you tell me how was that experience in Portugal, and then you went to Scotland after that?
No, actually, I was in Scotland first.
Oh, you're in Scotland first.
I was
okay.
in Scotland for first. And then I left Scotland and went to France to join up with a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to walk the Camino. So we had already booked our stay for 6 weeks on a farm right on the Camino in Portugal. And we were in France for a month and a half or so. And then in February, we headed off. February 14th, we arrived at Verão, Portugal, settled into our little farm accommodation, started exploring Portugal and walking on three different caminos. We did Fatima and we did São Bento, and then we did a little bit of the Santiago, you know, just kind of preparing, doing these kind of short walks for 3 or 4 hours, getting ready
for it.
And
how long is the Camino?
Well, there's several different ways to do the Camino. You can start in Jerusalem and walk the Camino, or Britain and walk the Camino.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the most common ones
that.
Are France and Spain.
Right.
And the Portugal one we were doing was what they call the Litoral, which is the seaside. So it's the least mountainous.
Uh-huh.
And we wanted to do that.
And
ours was 150 miles.
Okay. And how much of it did you actually get to do?
About 35.
That's pretty good though, still.
Well, we were just doing short little runs, and we were visiting people in other parts of Portugal.
Yeah.
So we'd already gone all the way to the south of Portugal. And on the 14th of March, which was my birthday, I had it in Tavira on the south sea of Portugal. And the next day, all the borders slammed shut around us. And we raced back north, hoping to hit Verão, grab our stuff, and head off and get across the Spanish border.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't.
And they kept you.
And then we were there. I mean, we couldn't cross the borders.
And did you stay on this farm?
We stayed on the farm.
Was it like a working farm? Like
yes.
Like woofing kind of situation?
No, it wasn't woofing.
No.
We weren't woofing. We were B&Bing. We were Airbnb guests and wonderful people.
It's great that you actually got to be able to stay there and continue on.
And with this family, these beautiful people, the Maya family, Santos Maya, wonderful people.
Wow.
So we were blessed.
Yeah.
We got to see what living on a farm, what a multi-generational farm in Portugal actually looks like. They had cattle, they had sheep, they had hundreds of different kinds of birds that they gathered eggs from and sold to the local people. I mean, it was just amazing.
Did they make their own cheeses?
They used to, and they used to make their own wine.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make cheese anymore. Another person in their community does that.
What is the local cheese of Portugal? I mean, like Spain, it's Manchego.
I couldn't tell you the name of it.
Yeah.
But it's a ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's made out of sheep or goat.
Yeah.
There's not as much avash, cow.
Yeah, there's a lot of sheep in that area.
Yeah, and goats everywhere. We had goat meat frequently.
Wow.
From the flock right across the street, you know, from where we were staying.
How is that? I've never had
goat. It was always young goat. It was kid, you know, and it was kind of stringy, actually.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You know, I wouldn't go for goat meat. That wouldn't be my first choice on the menu.
As a vegetarian, it wouldn't be my choice either. But to each his own, of course.
Yeah.
So, Carla, we're gonna read your story, of course. Well, you're gonna read your story, but you have done a lot of traveling within like eco villages and intentional communities, mm-hmm. and you're gonna talk about that in this story. But will you just give us just a little synopsis of what that is, and then we're gonna talk more about it after the story.
Okay. Well, the eco village / intentional community I'm most familiar with is mm-hmm. Findhorn,
okay.
which is on the Moray Firth of Scotland. So it's on the other side of the Highlands. It's halfway between Inverness and Aberdeen on the Moray Firth. It's been...
And what is the Moray Firth?
Oh, the Moray Firth. Okay, so if you're in Scotland, mm-hmm. there's two large, what they call a firth, which is the land is actually separating out. It's like a rift valley. There's two different tectonic plates that are separating. And so the sea comes in. So the Northern Atlantic Sea is moving into Scotland along the Moray Firth. And the very end of that is Inverness. Mm-hmm. And the one south of that is the Firth of Forth, which is where Edinburgh
is. That can
get
confusing.
Yeah, I know. You don't want to go there. So basically, they're on different tectonic plates, which are separating, and the sea comes in. And it's really wide. Like from where we were in Findhorn, if we looked across at the northern piece of that mm-hmm. Landscape, we were like 8 to 10 miles away. And it's continuing to spread. So,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, it only spreads millimeters every year, but still it's a moving landscape.
Yes. Yeah. It's enough to to notice it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
well, it is actually. Yes. Yeah. You know, so you don't build your house on the edge of anything up there, actually.
Yeah. That could get a little dicey.
Yeah. All right. Ooh, my garage used to be right here. No. Anyway.
All right. Well, awesome, Carla. Well, I look forward to hearing your story. And so do all the listeners out there.
Okay, I'll read this. So this took place in August and September of 2008. So I'll just start. Okay, so I was living in Findhorn, and I'd been there on a visa for 4 years, which was this intentional community where I lived with several hundred people. It was just lovely. And my visa was running out, and I decided it was time to head home. But before I went home, I kind of wanted to see just a little bit more of Europe before I actually headed back.
Yeah, it's always a little bittersweet when you're heading home.
Yeah,
There's always something else that you want to see.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, always.
So my partner, Stephen, is from Belfast. So mm-hmm. we spend a fair amount of time visiting friends of his in Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went there to say goodbye to several people before I left. So this is how the story goes.
Okay.
It was a very wet summer in Ireland in 2008. My partner, Stephen, and I were visiting friends in Ballycastle on the Antrim coast. In August, it was so wet that even the most accomplished gardeners, and the Irish are very accomplished gardeners, actually, had given up trying to grow vegetables. They were just letting their gardens, you know, go to waste because everything was mud. Instead, they took to rambling together to pass the time. And one very rainy Sunday afternoon, I chose to stay indoors while my Irish friends took their routine walk across the saturated hills of Northern Ireland. I had received an invite to Kalikolos Retreat Center in Greece, which is associated with Findhorn. It's one of our summer camps. My friend Harula is from Crete, and she sent me a little note saying, come to Greece. You know, you haven't seen it yet. Before you go home, come to Greece. So my visa was expiring. I had to leave the UK by August 22nd, and I was tuning in, as we say in Findhorn, to my next steps. And as I sat at the computer, I thought, yeah, I'm going to go to Greece. And by the time my friends returned an hour later, drenched and chilled to the bone, I had bought my ticket to Thessaloniki, Greece, and I flew out of Inverness on the following Tuesday. So August in Ios Giannis on the Pelion Peninsula is terribly hot. I found it hard to breathe, but easy to sweat through the humid, still nights. Harula and I decided to escape the heat of the coast, and we headed inland to Meteora to explore the monasteries, which are built on enormous rock towers and boulders known as the Stone Forest. Quite an exceptional landscape, even without the ancient monasteries perched at the top of these strange mounts. By the time I returned to the Pelion Peninsula a week or two later, on the eastern side of Greece, it was September and the weather had cooled a bit. I returned alone because Harula went back to Crete, and I chose not to go to Crete, which was still very hot at that time. So even though I had very little English, and there was very little English spoken in Iosyanith, I had a lot of English, had very little Greek, sorry.
I knew what you meant.
There was something so gentle and friendly about this small town and these people that I felt like I belonged there. And I was good at tuning into that at that point in my life. In fact, I felt totally at home, and I stayed for the following month. I swam every day in the warm ocean, which was just at the feet of the hotel, and I explored the incredible wonders of the ancient seaside mountains. As I would sit on the terrace of my tiny family-run hotel, I could gaze on the crystal-clear, deep blue waters of the Aegean Sea. Occasionally, a pod of dolphins flashed across the horizon, and the child in me leaped with them in delight. Sometimes I wanted to race across the limestone pebbled beach and swim to meet them. They were always gone before I ever reached the water's edge. It was hot, not as hot as August had been, but hot enough to keep all the windows of my cozy little hotel room open day and night. Surprisingly, there were no mosquitoes, thank God, which was fantastic because the windows had no screens. But the best part of the open windows was the sound of the water. From the balcony in the front, I heard the waves of the Aegean, which was just a single lane road and a white beach away. And through the back windows, the luscious sound of cascading water splashing down out of the mountains and past the hotel. The weeks passed slowly, and every day I discovered something new, unexpected, something magical. Tourist season was past, and I was blessedly alone, the only American in a small beachside Greek town. My host treated me like a returning family member. As I remember it, I was their only guest, and so I received all the kindness and generosity that this traditional Greek family had to offer. Every morning, I would sit on the heavily fruited grape arbor deck in the front of the hotel, staring out at the ocean, and eat delicious homemade breakfasts of fresh bread, yogurt, fruit, coffee, honey from their own bees, fig jam, and cheeses. Miltais, the son who ran the hotel, spoke the little English that he knew with the most musical accent. One morning, as I looked up at a huge bunch of muscatel grapes hanging above me, I asked if his family made wine, and he said yes. Then he climbed on the chair, cut the whole bunch down for me to eat as breakfast, and from that day on, I had great Greek grapes on my plate every morning for breakfast. As much as I loved the beach and the warm, clear water, I also fell deeply in love with the forested hills that rose steeply above the shore. There were well-worn, cobbled paths, at least 1,000 years old, leading up into these forests of chestnut and oak, maple, beech, and sycamore trees that were as big around as a car. The limestone mountains, known as the Mountains of the Centaurs, are riddled with fresh spring water and waterfalls, and old stone basins where I could stop to drink this cool, delicious water and sit in the shade of the great-grandmother trees. It's an ancient landscape, and I often sit for long spells drinking in the deep peace of these places. One very fine day, I wandered down a grass-riddled stone path into a venerable old olive grove. I sensed rather than saw a bit of human habitation below me. As I emerged from the quiet of the trees, I was suddenly in a minuscule village, very old village. I walked down the dirt track, along with a couple of mules and a few goats, into a small cluster of stone buildings. One two-story building seemed to be a store or a cafe, so I entered and greeted the elderly man behind the counter. As soon as I spoke, this tall, gaunt man was transformed. His face brightened, his eyes sparkled, and he asked me, "American?" I answered yes, and he hurried out from behind the counter and beckoned to me to follow. His enthusiasm was infectious, and I didn't hesitate. We walked out the back squeaky door of the store and onto a stone terrace overlooking the small harbor. He stopped just outside the door and turned around to face the back wall of the building. I followed his lead and found myself looking at a large poster enclosed in a glass or plexiglass frame. Half of the poster was an advertisement for the movie Mamma Mia. The other half was the story of the making of the movie here, in this village of Damuhari, and how Meryl Streep had stayed in the village with the locals, about how they admired and appreciated her connection with the village people during the making of the movie. This lovely man was enamored with Meryl, and as a fellow American, I was warmly welcomed like a sister. The sweet man called to his grandson, a young man of about 20, who spoke some English, and they insisted that I sit down and have coffee and biscuits with them. It was utterly innocent and beautiful, and it touched my heart to be greeted and treated with such kindness. We sat and talked with words and hands and faces for quite a while, and Damuhari became one of my favorite destinations as I wandered the Greek coast. Despite its fame as a location of Mamma Mia, it had not been spoiled in any way. It was still a tiny traditional village with a simple harbor and a quiet atmosphere. I returned to visit this intimate village and these gentle people several times during my remaining month on the Pelion Peninsula.
I have a dream, a song to sing, to help me cope with anything. If you see the wonder of a fairy tale, you can take the future, even if you fail. I believe in angels, something good in everything I see. I believe in angels, when I know the time is right for me, across the street.
Carla, that's a beautiful story. When I hear your description of Greece, it's a place I've never been to, but I've always wanted to go. It just sounds so beautiful and magical. And I think about those moments in time that we all have when traveling, and language is not always what you can communicate with, and just trying to like figure out how to have that human connection without actual language. And yeah, it is so special, and it's so important when you can find that spot.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time Adam and I, we were in Bulgaria, and we befriended this older woman, and she came over to where we were at this house where we were staying. And she probably stayed with us for 2 hours, and she must have been like a, you know, 70-year-old lovely lady with a babushka. Her name was Baba Rada. And we had a little baby keg of beer, and she brought us over some like cheese and strawberries. And I speak no Bulgarian. She spoke no English, and she was with us for 2 hours, and we just had the best time. And like, she drank beer with us, which I don't think she normally does at all. And I mean, just like, and it was one of the most magical moments that I've ever had.
Yeah.
And when you describe that time in that town with that family eating biscuits and coffee, it warms my heart.
Yeah.
That is why I love to travel.
Exactly.
Those very small moments.
They're the best.
Yeah.
They're what
yeah.
it's all about for me. Absolutely.
Me too. Yeah. It's all, I mean, that time with other people and just learning just the minute, tiny little things of what makes them happy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A bit of a biscuit, you know, just like the tiniest things. And you're like, excellent. I like sugar too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's really, really feeling that deep connection that we all have.
Yeah.
It is all reason. It's the reason for travel. And for me, it's the reason for living, actually.
Absolutely.
I mean, what is there if there isn't that connection? If you're not part of this bigness, this amazing, wondrous universe that we live on.
Oh, I know.
This planet. And yeah, that's where you find it. You find it in other people's eyes and in their tone of their voice and then their experience of it. I mean,
yeah,
if it isn't shared, for me, it's very flat.
It's very flat. And what's the point?
Yeah.
I agree with you. I agree. Yeah. Tell me, have you gone back to this town?
I have not.
No.
And I want to. It's like, it's been on the list forever. But there's so many other things on the list. And
I know.
They just keep coming at me.
That's the thing. It's a big world. When you talk about the Irish summers and how rainy and crazy they are, it's a funny thing because Adam and I often will like ask friends in Ireland, we'll be like, well when is summer? And they start to laugh and they go, when is it? It's always like the big question mark for them too, you know, and to have a 2008 crazy summer. I mean, I've been there in summer and I've had a couple beautiful days, you know, where you sit out and you're just like, oh my God, I'm going to grab the bottle of beer, let's sit in the sun and really soak it up. But then it's like, you know, 15 minutes.
I know.
And then it goes back. And although I like that crazy rain too, but it always sort of dismays Adam. He can't handle it in summer. He's like, well, I might as well just go to, I don't know. He's like, always trying to figure it out. And I'm like, it's funny because he goes, well, we'll just go in January. At least I know it's crappy everywhere. Okay, great. January it is. tell me more about Finhorn.
Okay.
And about these communities that you are a part of.
Okay. So Finhorn is part of a couple of different things. It's an international intentional community of mm-hmm. which there are hundreds around the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all of us. There's a spectrum from here to the end of the earth to describe them. You know, you can choose your flavor and get the one you want. Finhorn was established basically in the early 1960s, and it's one of the longest lasting, very large ones. So the average number of people living there is between 300 and 400, you know, and
at any given time.
Mm-hmm. And these are people who actually are a member of the community. So there's layers, if you will. There's the people who volunteer and stay for 3 months. And then there's the people who stay for 3 years. And then there's the people who have been there since it started, you know, and they're in their 80s
now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is. It's amazing. Yeah. And it's a very fluid community.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they have got, because it is an intentional community that's part spiritual and part eco-village.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say spiritual, I don't mean religious. There's no religion. There's no guru. It's very much a consensus community. So everyone is equal. We're really careful about rank and privilege in the community. No matter what you do in the community, we're all equal.
God, if only the rest of the world would learn some of those things.
I learned a lot. I learned a lot living there.
I bet.
You know, and it's a struggle, I have to say. You know, it's mostly a Western European community, mm-hmm. though we have people from all over the world. We have a fair number of Japanese, a few Chinese, some Thai and Vietnamese people, some South Americans.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, the community is European. We have a tiny splash of Americans.
Yourself,
but you know, we get to see the difference between rank and privilege as it is practiced
right.
in different cultures, and we struggle with it. You know, to try and keep clear, to have really strong I messages.
So, how is it for you personally? Like when you are in a community like that, and then you come back to you know, say Vashon, or just you know mm-hmm. the United States in general, and you know, things, there is hierarchy and there is, mm-hmm. You know, different intentions that are not always
right,
you know, for the better of humans. And how is that like on your day to day? I mean, Vashon, I assume it's a pretty gentle place in
it
general,
is.
You know,
it is.
But I mean, if you were in, you know, Los Angeles or, you know what I mean? Where it's a dog eat dog world.
It isn't a little bit of a transition, I have to say, every time. And I've gotten better at it because I've been doing it for quite a few years. Because I actually stepped into Finhorn in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I lived there for 4 years as a member of the community. And so you really do get to the point where that's your culture. And then I go other places in the world and I see a lot more of the trauma thing going on. People not being able to be clear
mm-hmm.
about what it is, not ask for what they want, not respect other people. One thing I noticed when I'm in Finhorn, we think before we speak. You know, conversations are much slower.
Mm-hmm.
And I come back to America and I see my interaction speed up. I see myself interrupt and step into somebody else's sentence.
It's like you have to keep up.
I don't even know. It's just... It is a cultural thing, and some of it's fine.
Yeah.
But some of it is a kind of it's an overriding kind of a thing periodically. So it's lovely to be there. I really love it.
And you had talked earlier about that Finhorn is, correct me if I have this not right, but like it's on a beach and there are caravans where you guys
right.
sleep. And you are one of the, when you were there during the longer periods that you were there, you were cooking.
Yes.
And it's a vegetarian
community, and it's
self-sustaining.
Yes. Yes, pretty much so. Yeah. I mean, we can't grow our own rice, but we don't use a lot of rice.
Sure.
And we can't grow our own oil, so we do have to buy oil.
Right. What about salt? Is there a salt? Or is there salt
isn't
from
a
that
problem
area?
For most of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're on the sand is salty up there.
Right. No, that's what I mean. Like, so Carla has been with our friend Andy, who was here a couple weeks ago on the show, and they went to Sardinia,
yep,
into the town that we
love,
Cagliari.
Yeah.
And the reason that I was going to say that is, so Sardinia, there are a bunch of like salt mines. And if you leave the actual city of Cagliari, the capital city, and you go out to one of my favorite beaches, it's called Poetto, you pass all these salt mines. And actually, one of the gifts that I love to bring back for people is Sardinian salt. Sardinian sea salt is really heavy, but it totally is like one of the nicer salts that you can get.
And that's a clean ocean right there. I mean, when it comes to the Mediterranean, I think that's one of the cleaner areas. So actually,
you know, I would like to think so, but in the last like probably 10 or 15 years, the cruising situation and cruise, like the giant boats really come into port there more now than ever, because they would have, you know, these cruise lines that would go to different countries, especially like Northern Africa or, you know, but in, you know, recent years, they've stopped because of like different terrorism fears, I guess, really is what it is. I mean, legitimately, you know, there are serious things that happen in the world. And so Cagliari has been one of these cities that have picked up the slacks of places to stop. And so I like to think it's clean, but I'm not sure how clean it is like 20 years ago.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. Well,
whatever.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we're going to have another song and then we're going to come back.
I'm nothing special, in fact, I'm a bit of a bore. When I tell a joke, you've probably heard it before. But I have a talent, a wonderful thing, 'cause everyone listens when I start to sing. I'm so grateful and proud. All I want is to sing it out loud. So I say thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can live without it? I ask in all honesty, what would life be without a song or a dance? What are we? So I say thank you for the music, for giving it to me.
You gotta just love ABBA, don't you? These are lesser known of the world famous ABBA songs, but they are wonderful nonetheless.
Have you
actually seen the movie Mamma Mia?
Oh, yeah. I saw it after I got back.
Yeah,
I didn't even know
really
it had been
to.
Made. And I was like, oh, my God. I love that movie.
I've never seen it, but there's a girl that I work with who is constantly saying that we need to have a Mamma Mia night, because we play it a lot at Snapdragon.
Oh,
because ABBA is one of Adam's favorite bands ever.
Oh.
Just to go back to that movie for 1 second, I can imagine that town is so beautiful. There's another movie that is set in Greece that I love so much. It's called Mediterraneo. Is it something that you've ever seen?
No.
It came out in the early 90s, and it's by an Italian director named Gabriele Salvatores. And he is somebody who would go on to direct many other things. But this movie is set in Greece during World War II. And what it is it's a lot of Italian soldiers that basically they weren't shipwrecked, but they got sent to this island and then they got forgotten about, and they spend years and years and years, and it's about their time there. And it's really beautiful. And if you like this area, and I know you like the Italian culture, it's a movie that you should definitely look into. Yeah,
all right.
For sure.
I've been everywhere.
Carla, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it. And you're going to have to come on another time, because I know that you have a million more stories about travel, and I love to pick your brain about it.
Good.
Yeah, and hear all the different places.
Absolutely.
Jeff Hoyt, thank you to you, and thank you to Voice of Vashon. And next week, we're going to have another character who likes to travel the world on with us. Have a great week.